As science progresses, as does our understanding of medicine. And with that comes an ever-growing list of life-saving operations for those in need. But with this comes an ever-growing list of people who require it. The waiting times for certain operations are unanimously too long around the world, with many requiring transplants to replace the certain organs they have that may be steamrolling its vessel into an early grave. As the internet progresses and expands the amount of information we receive on a daily basis, our understanding of the importance of such procedures and the dangers of waiting times reach us all. It seems inevitable, with our often cynical views of the world around us, that stories of a darker side of this incredible feat of science and medicine would arise, teasing our insecurities and fears. With many citizens of our capitalistic society seeing tax for universal healthcare as theft, we can only imagine how horrifying it would be to find that the thing that was stolen was part of yourself. I'm Luke Mordew, and this urban legend is the Kidney Heist. As one of the most famous urban legends, many of us have heard some iteration of the Kidney Heist, playing on several fears we have when it comes to strangers, operations, medication, knives and needles, and an invasion of space beyond any recognition. It is not unheard of to feel afraid to go under the knife during any situation, shaking the nerves of even the most stoic of us. The parts of us that sit inside of our bodies remain. We are so familiar with them, and yet we've never seen them, as they work a way to keep our bodies ticking and alive. The idea of a knife cutting us open, hands and tools entering us, even in the cleanest of spaces, is enough to shake us to the core, and yet we do it. We do it as we trust our surgeons. We trust that it is what is needed to be done for the greater good of ourselves. So when a story arises of somebody who had a piece of them stolen, cut open and removed from their inside against their will, it is no surprise that it would spread like wildfire, burning away at all of our natural anxieties. My telling of the story follows Gary, a young man on a business trip away from home, looking forward to a nightcap and a good night's rest, unaware that he will get anything but. It was already 1 a.m. when Gary perched himself at the bar of the small, posh little hotel he was staying at on the expense of his work's tab. A long day of meetings and conferences about mundane steps moving forward was enough to deserve a stiff drink before bed, even if it was a nice change to get away from the office for a little while. He watched the barman pouring his drink as he studied the warm colours of the British, cottage-like effect of the hotel. It must once have been a very large house for a rich family before being turned into a building of hospitality. He was already somewhat merry from his evening of drinks, buttering up potential investors further into town before heading back to the hotel. He pulled off his tie from around his neck as he undid a button of a shirt, now creating a more casual look to his suited attire while he scanned the empty room. He let out a sigh as he contemplated going to bed and trying to sleep once again, when he noticed that he wasn't in fact alone at all. Across the room sat a beautiful woman, her skin pale, her eyes large and green, her hair dark and her lips rosy red. She gently suckled on the top of a straw as the green of her eyes glinted in his direction. For a moment he was confused. He'd seen her before earlier in the night, but he couldn't place where from. It couldn't have been at the bar he was at, that'd have been too coincidental, yet he couldn't figure out where else. He looked at the floor and smiled as he noticed her eyes were now fixed on him, watching him as she drank her beverage. Just talk to her, he told himself, trying not to be intimidated by the enchanting beauty she exuded across the room. Finally, he looked up to talk, but she was gone. Her drink now half empty, the straw sitting against the glass inside. He sighed to himself again, picking up his drink and taking a swig, disappointed and frustrated at himself for missing his chance. What's a guy like you doing in a place like this? He heard a soft woman's voice almost whisper into his ear in a strange foreign accent that he couldn't place due to his own ignorance.
He turned to see she was now standing beside him at the bar, leaning casually against it as she watched him. He studied her every move that seemed so full of sexual power and lust. "Isn't that my line?" he asked with a cheeky smile, thankful that she had broken the ice. "Did I see you earlier at the bar?" he asked, keen to fill his curiosity. She contemplated for a moment and replied,
"No. I've been here all day. Perhaps you've seen me here."
Gary knew that he had dropped off his bags and left. He also knew that he had seen nobody in the hotel as he was making jokes about the barren building he was staying in all evening. But by now, the blood was leaving his head, and his focus had quickly turned to impressing the young beauty rather than questioning her arrival. There were several warning signs that something was strange, but the distant strangeness of this woman was morphed into an alluring, sexy mystery under the guise of a beautiful face that Gary had been sucked into.
He had fallen under her spell with such intensity that by the time he invited her up to his room,
he genuinely believed that this was his idea, completely unaware that she had planted the seeds moments before. Finally, Gary's night of struggling sleep had changed as he sat on the edge of that old-fashioned bed with this mysterious foreign woman sat above him, kissing his neck and chest as she unbuttoned his shirt. It was only when he began to run his fingers up her smooth thigh that she stopped him, suddenly exclaiming that she needed a drink, before pacing across the room and opening the mini-fridge by the kettle. Gary sat on the bed, impatient and frustrated yet full of excitement, still trying to get his head around his own luck as he watched her sway to the music she played whilst pouring the drinks on the desk ahead of her. She turned, continuing to dance as she swayed to the music, heading towards him with her drink in hand. The moment his fingers touched the glass, she smiled, raising hers to the air and exclaiming, "Cheers." With that, he followed suit, and they both swigged back the beverages as he held back the burn that didn't seem to bother her, embarrassed to show that it did hurt due to some ill-placed concept of masculinity. "Come here," he asked, but she did not respond, continuing to swing her hips to the music as she stepped back further into the room. He sat on the edge of the bed and watched her, a slight smile on his face, when the room began to slowly spin. He shook his head, laughing under his breath with a deep exhale. "Bloody hell, that was strong," he exclaimed as the alcohol kicked in. Once again, the mysterious woman did not respond, simply swaying in the room as if enchanted by the sounds of the instruments that played through the small speakers beside her. It was only now, with the constant refusal to respond and the consistent growing of the blurring of the bedroom as it swayed side to side, that Gary realized something was up. He got to his feet, rubbing his eyes, trying to keep himself steady, laughing again under his breath, playing it down to help diminish any embarrassment as if it was a simple case of getting too drunk too fast. The possibility seemed to disappear in an instant as he looked up to see the woman was no longer dancing, now standing in the middle of the room watching him. "You're going to want to sit back down," she said calmly, coldly, and most surprisingly, in an English accent. "What did you give me?" he asked, his tiring body unable to match his mind's fear and panic. He began to swear and shout, swinging his arms in an attempt to defend himself, but unfortunately all that came out were a few whimpers and a couple of slow steps forward before he finally collapsed to the ground, still whispering his angry threats until he drifted off to sleep. In the darkness, Gary heard the faint voice of the mysterious woman continue to talk in her well-mannered British accent. He didn't know if she was talking to him or on the phone. Later, he would hear the voices of men in the room. He would feel his body rise from the ground as they picked him up. He would hear the deep discussions they would have, not being able to make out any real words until eventually, there was nothing but darkness. The blackness faded and Gary's thoughts came back to him in a slow haze under the cold blue light of the bathroom. His body was numb, yet he was still shaking. As if the very act of seeing it made it worse for him, the moment he looked down to see he was in a bathtub full of melting ice, his body shot himself upright, freezing in pain from the sudden movement. He looked around the room, studying the dark corners, trying to peer into the warm lights of the hotel bedroom through the gap in the door, but he was in fact now alone. He could see a long wire that reached from the bedroom to the bathroom, connected to a phone that sat by the taps on the sink, a small note on pink paper resting beside it.
He grabbed the side of the bath and pulled himself up, steadying himself to get to his feet, halted by the sudden, sharp, aching pain that ran through his body from his side, like a stitch from hell. He fell back into the freezing water, looking down to his waist in confusion. What he saw was a 6-inch incision to his side, hastily stitched back together, uncleaned and unkempt. He wanted to scream out in horror as he felt his insides twist and burn as if they had been cut out without any sleight of touch. He took a deep breath, trying to piece together the horrifying events that must have unfolded during his unconscious state, trying to remember the woman's face. He did not know her name or where she came from. He didn't know if she had followed him from the bar to the hotel, or if she was staying in this very building. She very well could have been on the floor below watching television. With a deep exhale, he pushed himself over the edge of the bath once again, growling in pain as his cold skin pulled against the porcelain edges, pulling his wound apart until he slammed against the floor below. He laid here for a moment before pulling himself closer to the sink, reaching up to grab the phone that sat upon it. Unsure if the shaking was due more to fear or to the ice that both caressed and bit at his body, he pulled the phone, causing it to fall hard, nearly hitting him in the face. With it fell the pink slip, landing by his arm as he dialed the reception on the bottom floor. He could feel and hear his teeth chattering, his eyes filling with tears as he listened to the ringing of the phone to the front desk. He looked down at the paper by his arm and turned it over. On it, in elegant handwriting, was written, "Sorry. You're going to want to call for help. Kiss." This story, above many urban legends, is one of the most widely believed. Spread across the globe through film, television, and the World Wide Web. But it is also, in comparison to many other urban legends, still an infant. Its blood-soaked head amongst the zeitgeist of the early 90s. The story itself is so feasible, so simple in its narrative, that it almost doesn't sound like an urban legend at all. As horrific and terrible the event is, and as much as we would like to avoid its occurrence, it would still be considered average amongst the dark stories that emerge from the black market or from the war crimes that have been recorded over time. In a strangely fitting manner, being so modern in its creation and delivery, one of the earliest accounts of the story appeared in the television show Law and Order in April 1991 in an episode titled Sonata for Solo Organ. Although, as many of the episodes of Law and Order, they prided themselves in the fact that the crimes that they created were inspired by real-life events. Although it wasn't until 1997 that the story exploded around North America. From a forgotten episode amongst hundreds of hour-long crimes that appeared in a popular TV show and morphing to become the urban legend that it is today. Once again, keeping up with its contemporary design, it was an email that spread the story of a stolen kidney, like an untreated infection, across the internet. In an early form of chainmail, the subject header warned, "Travelers beware," with the contents inside explaining that a highly organized gang were operating in major US cities, drugging business travelers and stealing their kidneys to sell on the black market. To add authenticity to this email, several testimonies from others claiming that the events had occurred in their part of the country was placed at the bottom, along with the request that the recipient pass it on to their friends and colleagues as they travel around the country for work. In a time before a greater understanding of spam, where cast members of the sitcom Friends were hired to shoot how-to videos to help people get to grips with their computers, this worked a treat, and the story continued duplicating as it jumped from office to office. From here, as expected when using the new technology of the World Wide Web, the story travelled through every string of its webbing, crawling overseas to the United Kingdom and mainland Europe, before continuing the trail to the Eastern Hemisphere. This story was so widely believed as it moved from our screens to the water coolers and bars, discussed in magazines and newspapers, spreading a panic and fear amongst the general public. This became so strong and problematic for officials that eventually, the National Kidney Foundation put out a plea for any individual who had their kidneys illegally removed to step forward and contact them in an effort to dispel the belief, and to this day, not a single legitimate case has come to fruition. Regardless of this fact, the story lives on,
evolving and changing to fit the world as urban legends often do. More often than not, fear is an emotion that evokes a strong reaction. Mix this with the morbid curiosity and sheer will for these creepy stories to be true in an attempt to avoid disappointment in our own spooky world. It seems it will continue to live on for years to come. Just like the infamy of Jack the Ripper, it is the dark mystery that causes us to lean in over the campfire as the stories are told, no matter how fictional. But although the story itself is false, that doesn't mean that that is where the narrative of kidneys on the black market ends. The responses and reviews for Urban Legends have been a wonderful surprise for us here, and we're over the moon that our listeners are enjoying our content. Although it hasn't gone unnoticed that many of you have commented that you wish there was more content from us. This is why we've begun a Patreon with two tiers. For £4 a month, you can join us as a mythologist, where you can catch all episodes of Urban Legends without any of these ad breaks, allowing you to focus on the story at hand, as well as exclusive hidden episodes released the Monday after each legend, delving into similar legends not covered in the main series. For £8 a month, you can join us as an anthropologist, where you can catch all that I previously mentioned, as well as the ability to put your version of the legend forward to be read in the main series, invitations to live Q&As with me, work-in-progress updates, priority voting on what legends we'll cover in the seasons to come, and even the chance to feature on one of our footnotes. The more our Patreon grows, the more content we can create, and the shorter our breaks between seasons become. So, we hope you'll join us soon. And now,
all right, I think I hacked in.
We're on the air?
Shh, security's outside.
But how's my hair?
It's a radio station.
Psst, psst. You guys hear about the Beyond the Shadows podcast with Ryan and Scott?
You guys into paranormal?
What about true crime?
How about UFOs and cryptids?
We also have mad hauntings.
We got security.
No, we don't. We're not big enough to need it yet.
No, we got security.
Hey, what are you guys doing? Get out of here! Listen to the Beyond the Shadows podcast.
Beyond the Shadows!
Back to the podcast. It was in December 1989 that Reuters reported on a 34-year-old Turkish man, Ahmet Kok. He claimed that he had been lured to Great Britain with the promise of a cleaning job by Turkish businessmen who had told him that to be approved, he would need a medical check. He went to a hospital, one that he suspected on hindsight was actually a hotel, and allowed himself to be given an injection under the false pretenses that they were in fact taking blood. It wasn't until 3 days later that he was told he had in fact had a kidney removed, and it had now been transplanted into another patient in the hospital, but that for his troubles, he would be paid handsomely in the amount of £2,650. Although at first glance, this seems like a very similar account of the kidney heist, it would later be revealed this was not the full truth, as Ahmet, it would seem, was in fact a willing participant of the illegal trade. Eventually, Ahmet went to the Turkish authorities to report the illegal organ brokers, and the result was a 2-year sentence for one of the brothers who initiated the deal. Ahmet himself received a 2-year suspended sentence for his role in the illegal trade. When the British press got hold of it, Ahmet's story exploded due to its juicy narrative and twisted story after it was called upon by General Medical Council's disciplinary hearing. This led to the final twist in this dark story, as an advertisement in a Turkish newspaper came to light, one offering to sell one of their kidneys. An advertisement placed by Ahmet himself. It seemed the truth, although dark, was just not sexy enough to live on its own 2 feet, and so instead, the world unconsciously decided to brush that under the rug and ran with the far juicier story of a man who had his kidney stolen, taken against their will. This may have been the inspiration for the early episode of Law & Order, but it might have been more than that, it very well seems to have been the birth of the brand new urban legend. The story of Ahmet was long forgotten by 1997 when the new email was running wild across the web. The New Orleans Police Department received more than 100 calls by concerned citizens due to the fact that New Orleans was one of the listed cities this was apparently taking place. This got so out of hand that the police department eventually put up a webpage specifically dedicated to this rumour, denying its existence in reality. Around the same time, elsewhere in the world, India's parliament passed a bill limiting organ donations to close relatives and enforcing prison terms for up to 7 years for selling an organ in 1995. Even so, it has been reported that in several states where the law had not yet been ratified by state legislators, men continued to find poor people in need of financial benefits and buying the kidney for $1,000. This may not seem much to us, but that was more than a year's salary for a rural Indian labourer, especially one that was already financially struggling. If that still seems too low to give up a part of your body, then the fact that those who took the kidney will be paid between $6,000 and $10,000 by the recipient of the organ can only be salt in the wound. Although outlawed, and although hard to say for certain, sources suggest that this is still going on in many places, with the prison sentences remaining fairly low when proven guilty due to the voluntary nature of the procedure. In May of 1998, three surgeons and seven others at the Noida Medical Center in Uttar Pradesh, India, were charged for approaching various unemployed indigent men with the promise of jobs and connections to a world of possibility. They were advised that a medical examination was required, and they would use these results to imply that a small operation was needed to fix a problem that they had. During these operations, and unknown to the victims, one of each of their kidneys was removed for resale. Once this was complete, there would be no job offer. Strangely enough, elsewhere in the world, in China, the Kilgore Matas report claimed that there are more organ donations given than there are official donors. The report alludes to the suspicion that prisoners of conscience are donating their organs against their will. This led to the US House of Representatives and the European Parliament to pass resolutions thoroughly condemning the practice. The allegations themselves have been strongly supported by a report as recent as 2017, the report being an update of two separate works of investigative journalism. The first being The Slaughter, Mass Killings, Organ Harvesting, and China's Secret Solution to the Dissident Problem by Ethan Gutman. And Bloody Harvest, The Killing of Falun Gong for Their Organs, written by David Matas and David Kilgore. The China Tribunal, a tribunal looking into the accusations of forced organ harvesting in China, released their final report and judgment in 2019. The tribunal's members are certain, unanimously, and sure beyond reasonable doubt, that in China, forced organ donation from prisoners of conscience has been practiced for a substantial period of time, involving a very substantial number of victims. As a result of this report, as well as China previously even admitting to harvesting organs in the past, reportedly ceasing to do so in 2015, several prominent journals are pushing for stronger controls to ensure that papers produced on organ transplantation only use those organs that are voluntarily obtained. My version of the tale was a mixture of several of the known stories, with an added flair or two as I got into it. This is what happens when the story is told in all four corners of the world. Small changes and embellishments that create different versions, only the core narrative staying true. In early incantations of the story, friends would come back to their hotel room to find a friend on either a blood-soaked bed, on the floor, or propped up against the side of the building outside. In this version of the story, it is only when they arrive at the hospital that a dark truth emerges that they have now had an organ removed. In the email version of the story that expanded the narrative around the globe, it often told of a businessman being bought drinks by a stranger at a bar, only to wake up in a bathtub covered in ice with the phone next to him with the message, "Call the police." Later, they would learn that their kidney was removed by criminals, who intended to now sell it on the black market. Over time, the friend's arrival to find the blood-soaked victim had been removed, replaced with a bathtub of ice and an ominous note. Perhaps this version of the tale survived due to the eerie nature of waking up, feeling completely violated, confused, and in a state of panic, only to find that on top of that, you were also completely alone. The note set a strange level of care, as if being handed a subtle taste of kindness, only emphasizing just how impersonal this attack was. In many ways, this does not make it more comforting. It does the opposite, reminding the victim that they were in fact nothing but a hunted animal that was now let free once they got what they required. In America, the story evolved once again, finding itself embedded in the city of Las Vegas. Here, the story followed a man who was more often than not married, who had taken a woman to his hotel room to fulfill his needs while he was away from home. This version of the tale twists it once again, turning it more of a warning story in who we invite into our lives and personal space, not to mention the got-what-you-deserved aspect that so often appears in urban legends. As if he had been loyal to his wife and family, he would have gone home happily the next day, fully intact. Before long, the story expanded across the US again in North America, and across England in the UK, and so on and so forth. Now the story was more sympathetic, where the wary business traveller went back to his hotel for a drink after a hard day's work, only to have been slipped a drug by somebody nearby. He would then wake up later with an open wound, a bath full of ice, and a note. This new version turned this wary traveller into any of us, representing how quickly our worlds can change, how often we may be being hunted without ever knowing it. Perhaps something similar had happened to us before, and we had gotten away by a simple change of actions that we never realized changed our lives. Perhaps next time, they'll get us.
Urban Legends is written and produced by Luke Mordew, research by Sean Davis, in association with Mordew Pictures, music by Billy Jar. If you like what you've heard and want to hear more, make sure to click subscribe. You can find out more about Urban Legends, including a complete written breakdown of this episode, with images, news reports, and citations listed on anything that's been said at lrmordew.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at ulpodcast, on Instagram at urbanlegends.podcast, or on Facebook by simply searching Urban Legends Podcast.